Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with privacy mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course. Present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again. Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is. Drawing board or...
Miro. All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
Thanks for listening to the Hit That Line Podcast Network. You can now download our new app in the iTunes or Google Play Store. Listen anytime and anywhere on your favorite mobile device. Just search Hit That Line now. Subscribe to the Hit That Line Podcast Network.
This podcast is powered by the pros at Pascal Air Plumbing and Electric. Arkansas owned, Arkansas operated. GoPascal.com.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light, proud sponsor of Arkansas Athletics.
I'm always high on the hogs, guys. I'm high. Well, I'm not high right now, but my day is young.
My odometer's way up there. I'm that 2018 that's already got 130,000 miles on it.
The Razorbacks rush across the field to get that boot.
Tommy, Chuck, and Ty, you guys are the gold standards of sports talk radio.
He bleeds to Arkansas.
Ty's got good hair.
Chuck, again, I don't care, though. Here's my thing. I would much rather see high-octane upsets like we saw Oakland beat Kentucky last night than I would my bracket winning me some, quote-unquote, selective money. I give me the Oakland over Kentucky winning the national championship and my bracket being accurate.
Oh, that was a great moment last night. It was a great moment. You had to feel happy for that coach. I mean, he's been there 40 years. 40 years. You know, and they beat Kentucky. I mean, what kind of cherry on top is that for Coach Campy to win a game like that? So, yeah, it was great theater. I mean, it's what the NCAA tournament's all about.
It was epic. It was epic that anyway, we got some highlights and other stuff to include. But how about that kid Gokey, man? He drills, and I didn't know this until I looked up his stat line of the season. Chuck, of his 335 field goal attempts this year, 327 of them have been threes.
Yeah, he's only shot eight 2-pointers all year.
All year, and this is a guy that was at the same college as Isaac Tesla years ago. At Hillsdale. And now he's playing in Oakland, the pride and joy of Rochester, Michigan. And they get the biggest win of Campy's career. In addition to that, Campy and Cal are friends. And so you have all these different storylines last night, and it was kind of leading up to it. Now Cal's going to get fired. That's going to happen, in my opinion, at least.
I think he's gone, man.
That's been one of my takes this morning. I think Cal's gone.
It's going to take a lot of money to make that change. I don't think it's going to happen. I know it's a popular sentiment today, and nothing would surprise me. But if I was a betting man, I would say he's their coach next season.
I don't know, as a Kentucky Board of Trustees member or their athletics director, Mitch Barnhart, how you justify keeping him with the supposed level of competition you're supposed to have in Kentucky basketball, because they've won one NCAA tournament game since 2019, one SEC tournament game since 2019, 1-4 in their last five NCAA tournament games, which is the worst since the 70s. I know it's a lot of money, 30 plus million, but if you're Kentucky, surely there's a couple of big time boosters that will pay to go, get away. And I guess the question becomes who you would get at that point. I can't see him surviving this game.
Let's enjoy the game last night before we start firing people. Let's enjoy the fact that Oakland gave us great NCAA tournament theater. It was one of the reasons we watched the NCAA tournament. yes, it was a very bad loss for Kentucky. But if you fired every coach that suffered an upset loss in the NCAA tournament, I mean, you'd be firing guys left and right. I know their expectations are higher. I understand that. But I mean, we're not even 24 hours removed from it. I don't think today's the day to decide whether or not to fire someone. And frankly, the fact that the rest of the country revels in Cal's failure tells you that he's generally in the spotlight. So I'd be surprised if it happens, but you may be right. Well,
Goki was the story last night, and he just kept drilling three after three.
Here's Goki again, putting up a three and hitting. Goki, here he is again, putting up a three.
Oh, my goodness.
Here's Goki. That's a deep three.
It's good.
12 points already. Here he is again.
Oh, oh boy.
Goki comes off a screen, fakes the three. Now he'll take it.
Yes, sir.
We're not a Cinderella.
Jack ended up with 32 points, 10 of 20 from three. Did not attempt a single two-pointer last night and knocked down two of three free throws. And whether it was Reeves, Shepard, Dillingham, Wagner, I mean, they just couldn't guard him last night.
Kentucky really, I thought, was out of sorts. I was going back and forth between Kentucky and the baseball game. I watched more of the baseball game until Kentucky got down the stretch. But, you know, Jeff Shepard wasn't a factor. And, you know, they need Jeff Shepard to be a factor. I thought their freshmen played like freshmen in an NCAA tournament game last night, which really surprised me, quite honestly. I just never thought Kentucky was in it at all. And I was very surprised to see them awed by the moment. But I really thought they were. And you could tell down the stretch that, you know, sometimes you watch a team like Oakland and you watch a game against a team like Kentucky and you know that in the end, Kentucky's going to come back and win. Mm-hmm. You just know. At the very end, they're going to come back and pull it out. I never felt that way. I never felt like Kentucky was going to come back and pull it out. They just didn't have it last night. And the zone just, it bothered them all night long. And I thought that's where Kentucky's inexperience really showed. Zones will bother lots of teams, but you get a really young basketball team. I'm not talking about a team full of transfers. Those guys have seen zones before, college zones. You get a freshman-laden team, and the other team slaps a really effective zone on them, it can ruin your night. And in Kentucky's case, it ruined their season.
You referenced the freshman. DJ Wagner goes 0 for 5. Shepard's 1 for 5, and Dillingham is 2 for 9. And Cal got asked to just kind of how his team, particularly those guys, perform. Here's what he said following the game.
We had some guys that didn't play the way they'd been playing all year. We did everything we could. We knew the zone would be tough, but we miss shots we don't miss. The preparation, I thought they were in a great, trying to keep them loose, but when the game started, you had some guys not play to the level they could play.
I thought Kentucky was aiming last night when they shot, particularly Jeff Shepard. I thought Reed Shepard, Jeff's his dad, I guess, Reed Shepard. I thought Reed Shepard particularly when he shot was aiming. I thought they got tight, and when you get tight, you start aiming. Draw a baseball analogy to a pitcher that aims. Draw a football analogy to a quarterback that aims. I thought that was going on last night with Kentucky. And again, I was shocked because I thought they were tight. I thought they were awed by the moment, and I did not expect to see that.
Jay Wright said something after the game. JT and Hot Springs checked this in about Cal's model with the freshmen. Now, Reeves and also Edwards are transfer guys, and there's another guy or two that they brought in. But this class was either the first or second best freshman class in the country this past year.
I think you had eight freshmen and three sophomores, if I'm not mistaken, on this team.
Yeah, and Jay Wright said that his model has to change, and I don't think Jay Wright's incorrect in this case. When you think about, you referenced, and I remember what you said last year in the NCAA tournament about the Elite Eight squads, how I think it was 31 of the 32 starters on the Elite Eight teams were upperclassmen. it just doesn't work anymore. You can't do what he used to do in 2012, getting guys like Anthony Davis and Michael Kidd-Gilchrist and others. You can have one or two, but you can't have the majority of your players as freshmen, because when you play a veteran-laden team like they did last night in a complicated 1-3-1 zone, even as good as they are shooting the ball, that's going to happen. They're going to get bewildered. The bright lights are going to be too much. It's not just Cal. It's other teams in college basketball that play in the NCAA tournament too.
I'm not disagreeing with anything you're saying. I think he'll probably change some things moving forward. But isn't it interesting, though, and we've talked about this before, that in college basketball, this is the great part about college basketball, and it's the really bad part about college basketball. All that matters is March.
Mm-hmm.
All that matters is March. You can talk until you're blue in the face about November and December and January and February. All that matters is March. And good or bad, you know, you can turn an average season into a great season with a March run. You can have a great regular season. If you crash and burn early, it's a total failure in your people's eyes. And it's just proof once again that basketball, for better or worse, college basketball is a one-month sport. You do everything for 1 month.
Mm-hmm. And Cal said he hated the fact that his team's defined by one game.
They shouldn't be, in our team in the season, defined by that game, but it will be. This is the profession we've chosen.
Too bad.
From The Godfather, you know that.
Yeah, too bad. That's you're the Kentucky head basketball coach. You have those expectations. Get over it. Don't cry about it. It's part of being the head basketball coach in Kentucky. Those expectations are upon you once you step foot in the halls of Rupp Arena.
Well, you're right, but I'm not going to dance on Kentucky's grave today because we're not there. So I'm not going to dance on their grave today. I hear you. It's fun when Kentucky loses. Other games occurred yesterday, and there were some great ones. You want to talk about a team that's fortunate this morning? It's Kansas. You know, there's Tennessee that played like a number one seed last night, even though they're seeded number two. The Kentucky game's not the only game that was played last night. And Kentucky's not the only team that's disappointed this morning. They are Kentucky. But look, in the grand scheme of things, a number three seed got beat last night. It's not like a 16 beat a one. It's not like the top seed in the tournament got beat. A three seed got beat by a 14. Major upset, no doubt about it. Major upset. But it did not turn the tournament upside down.
It's never happened in Kentucky basketball history prior to last night. They were 14-0, I think, against three seeds prior to last night, and then counting those guys lost. Let's talk to Jimmy and Conway this morning. Jimmy, you got some thoughts on this Kentucky game last night?
Top of the morning to you, fellas. Hey, it's always a little bit sweeter when it's a conference rival that gets knocked out, especially Kentucky. Now, I'm going to tell you what happened to them in that game. They showed up to the arena like they do 90% of the time, thinking, we're Kentucky. We don't have to even do anything to beat this club. And they got punched in the mouth. And they didn't know how to react. And Calipari's team is not defined by one game yesterday. It's defined by the previous seasons, all the way back to when he lost in the NIT to Farley Dickinson. He is constantly, hear me out, guys. Now, all the talent that has been through there, you think about all the NBA players that he has got to come to Kentucky. He has really underperformed. He has had so much talent, and he has one title, which is amazing. That's great. But for Kentucky, that's not that good with all the talent that's been through there. That's an opinion. I have family in Kentucky, and they refuse to cheer for the Cats until he is gone. They have wanted him for years. It's not going to be good for Calipari. He's going to get rich, no doubt, but it's going to be like a Jimbo Fisher deal. You're gone because you didn't get the job done. So, thanks, guys.
Appreciate the call, Jimmy. Jimmy's call earlier this week, Chuck, kind of coming to fruition. He was rooting against SEC teams. They went 1-3 yesterday. South Carolina lost. Mississippi State lost. Kentucky lost. You mentioned Tennessee blowing out St. Peter's. You only had one team that actually played like a team from the, what we...
Oh, it was a bad day for the league.
It was terrible.
But now, let's not sound like losers. Because our team's not there, we're going to enjoy the fact that other teams got beat. Let's not do that. I'm not crushed by the fact Kentucky got beat, but that's what teams that and programs that aren't any good do. They revel in other teams' failures.
I think it's just Kentucky as a whole, though.
I know, but there were other games last night. That was not the only game on. I mean, there was a baseball game last night. There was a lot of stuff that went on last night, and Kentucky will decide what they want to do with Cal. We got our own problems. I mean, we got our own problems.
You reference flicking back and forth between the Kentucky and the Arkansas baseball game. 1-0, the final against the Auburn Tigers. Pitching travels, and it did just that last night. Here's Dave Van Horn on three guys, McIntyre, Smith, and also freshman Gabe Gackle.
Well, I'm going to state the obvious. We pitched really well. Hagan had got into a couple of jams. One of them was because we didn't make a play in the outfield, and he got out of them. Amazing. Second and third, one out two different times. And he got out of both of them. All three of our pitchers did a tremendous job. You know, the bullpen with McIntyre and Gackle shut them down the last three innings and gave us a chance to win the ball game.
He also mentioned Arkansas had chances to put the game away earlier than they did in the bottom of the ninth. Luckily, again, Gackle got his fifth save of the season. But the key stat for me, Chuck, last night, Auburn was 1-15 with runners on base. Even when they got guys on base, which wasn't a lot last night, Smith, McIntyre, Gackle, they closed down those clutch situations. Also got some infield help as well.
They were very good. I mean, I thought Arkansas's pitching last night, and it needed to be good. I mean, it had to be good because Auburn's pitching was good. So I don't know that it was a question of Arkansas's failure offensively. I just think Auburn pitched well. Their guy, you know, he had a very good ERA, and he was 3-0 coming into the game, too. He didn't have as many strikeouts, but I thought Arkansas' staff last night was outstanding, and we had wondered how Gackle would do in that situation. I didn't worry about McIntyre, Smith, but you know, I sort of wondered how that freshman would do in that spot, and he did great. So it's a good night,
and we might see him today if there's a game, and definitely tomorrow, which it looks like there's rain coming down the pipe. Later on, it's going to start about 9 a.m. this morning. It's going to go through well into the night. So don't be surprised if they move the game back and do we have 2 7-inning games tomorrow. Gackle, though, again, expected to see they very pleased with his freshman in another closed-out game.
Oh, yeah, he's not done. He only threw 14 pitches. It was, you know, a stressful situation, but he didn't have runners on base, and it wasn't real – you know, it wasn't tough out there as far as on him physically. It's not like he had to throw a lot of pitches. So I would say maybe tomorrow, probably for sure on Saturday.
I think we had a pretty good idea of what the starting rotation was going to be. I know Molina didn't have the best fall and spring ball, but he's figured it out in the games thus far. We knew that Smith and Tiger were your 1 and 2, and we knew Mac was going to be your pin guy, your first pin guy, and maybe over the course of a couple of games. But even as a true freshman, the Cali kid, Gabe Gackle, seems like he's not going to wilt under pressure. And I know we got a lot of games to go, but thus far, he's when he's been called upon, he's delivered.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was saying a minute ago. I didn't know exactly how he'd do in this situation. But, I mean, he was doing great, and they gave him the ball, and he saved the game for him.
So what about Dave Van Horn and what's going on with him in this weekend? And I'm not talking about baseball-wise. Apparently his daughter's giving birth at potentially some point this weekend. He got asked about, hey, what's the change? The itinerary might mix up. Is Hobbs going to take over? Here's what Dave said about just kind of his family situation right now.
The school flew me out today because – it sounded like she wasn't going to have him, but they're going to have a meeting tomorrow. A couple more of her doctors who've been out of town are they're going to meet, and things are staying the same. Then they're going to try to get her through a few more days because every day, you know, the percentage goes up as far as just everything's better. She'll be at 29 weeks exactly tomorrow. So, you know, but if they decide to go in and get the babies, then I don't know if I'll be there. You know, my daughter Holland really wanted me to go. She kept saying, you need to go, even if they, you know, have the babies, that, you know, I'm not going to be able to see them anyway. No one's going to really see him. She didn't know she could see him. They'll just be in NICU for a while. So really, there's not a plan in place at the moment, but we'll just see what happens and go from there.
I think sometimes we forget that these guys aren't robots. They're not just coaching 24/7 all the time, that they have families, they have lives of their own. And I know for all the grandparents out there listening, that's a memento. It's a crazy experience in your life. And it sounds like Dave Van Horn's going to experience it pretty soon, Chuck.
Well, it does. Or he won't be able to experience it with him. I mean, I don't know exactly how all that'll work. It sounds like, but you know, more than anything, it's a momentous time in their lives, and hopefully everything goes well.
I don't know if I read this or if this was texted to me, and the accuracy of this may be incorrect, but they might be having triplets. I
believe that's right.
Is that right? Okay.
That is right.
I thought I had read that in Whole Hog Sports, but that's pretty pretty crazy if that is indeed the case. Hey, we're brought to you this morning by our friends at Wheels RV in Northwest Arkansas. They're excited to announce the addition of Brinkley RVs to an already loaded lineup of Grand Design and Forest River products. Come check out the all-new Brinkley Model Z, the latest innovation in luxury fifth wheels. It comes with a lifetime warranty, so you can camp and not just camp with being scared or worried about what's going on. You can camp with confidence. Come on in and see why Wheels RV is the best RV dealer year after year. 5 miles west off exit 72 in Springdale. Seek, explore, and discover with Wheels RV. Now, plenty of good games on yesterday. I was trying to flip between, or I had the Kentucky and Oakland game on, had the Arkansas and Auburn game on. But Chuck, if you look at yesterday, I say plenty of good games. The average margin of victory was 15 points. There was about four good games yesterday that stood out. I was a little bit underwhelmed with day one of the NCAA tournament, to be quite honest.
Yeah, there were a lot of one-sided games. There were a few that went down to the wire. You know, last night, for those who stayed up late, the Kansas-Samford game was really a great game. And Kansas is so lucky to still be alive and kicking today. I mean, so lucky. But there were a few close games here and there. But for the most part, there were a lot of one-sided affairs. You're right.
That was my upset pick, and Bucky Ball got hosed. That was about as clean a block as I've ever seen in college basketball. And, of course, the name on the front of the jersey, you can't tell me that refs don't look at that in the midst of a tight game, because Kansas got the beneficiary of another call in an NCAA tournament game. Ticks me off.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with privacy mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course. Present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again. Now, You're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is. Drawing board or...
Miro. All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's one.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
The Arlington Resort Hotel and Spa in downtown Hot Springs, Arkansas is the perfect destination for your next getaway. Join them for a romantic Valentine's Day getaway with a special dinner or romance package. Or if you're coming to town for live racing, they've got room for you every weekend, including Martin Luther King Day weekend and President's Day weekend. Experience all the luxury and hospitality of a Grand Southern Hotel. The accommodations are sure to please everyone. Visit ArlingtonHotel.com for more details. That's ArlingtonHotel.com.
Call or text the McLarty Daniel Hotline at 877-377-6963. McLarty Daniel, a vehicle for every lifestyle.
When you're looking for a new car, you want to shop for a vehicle you love with an organization you trust. You've probably heard that McLarty Daniel means making deals, but what I'm inspired by the most is that McLarty Daniel means making a difference in our community. When you buy a vehicle with McLarty Daniel, you reinvest right here in the community, in our schools, in our little leagues, in our food banks, and our people. So you're not just making a purchase, you're making a difference too. Come see us at any of our six locations in Northwest Arkansas.
The tournament is here. Bet Online is your bracket headquarters for this season with the best bracket contests out there and odds, lines, and info on every game and every round right up to the national championship. You can access the most up-to-the-minute wagering information anytime from your desktop or your mobile device and even track your bracket real-time all the way through the tournament. Head to Bet Online today and get in on all the action. Remember to use the promo code BLEAVE for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online. The game starts here.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light, proud sponsor of Arkansas Athletics.
So that is the sound of my bracket, Chuck, as most people do not have a perfect bracket. Listen to this stat, Chuck. Point
I know.
0.0038% are the only people after 16 games yesterday that have a perfect bracket.
It's incredible. There were the two games that busted everybody's bracket were Duquesne beating BYU and Oakland beating Kentucky. Those were the two games that really busted everyone away. It's when I threw mine away. And I think that I was reading where I think on ESPN's 75% of the people had – BYU winning that game, and I think on CBS's 99% had Kentucky winning. I think CBS on their perfect bracket, they've got 0.091 I saw was what was left, and it was it's really remarkable how those two games just blew everybody's brackets up.
Yeah, for Duquesne, I've got a friend that played for the Dukes last year, the year before, and I know he was really excited to watch them move on. The national connection, Keith Ambrott, who's their head coach, used to coach LeBron James in high school. One of his former players, Drew Joyce, is also an assistant on that staff, and he's going to retire after this season, but for now, he's just going to keep on coaching a little bit.
They just don't want me to retire, I guess. I'm trying to get to the promised land, and they're making me keep coaching. But, our guys played exactly what they had to do in order to win the game.
Just keep on coaching. They win their conference tournament. They were, a sixth seed in their conference tournament, Chuck, and ended up winning the whole thing. And now this guy's going to coach a little bit longer.
Hey, there's some value to getting hot at the right time. Look at Oregon. Look at the way Oregon dismantled South Carolina yesterday. That was never a game. That's an 11 seed that won their conference tournament, and they're hot. And you want to talk about a storyline, you know, we remember Dana Altman for what happened here, but, you know, he left Creighton, went back to Creighton, then left Creighton, went to Oregon, and now Oregon's going to play Creighton.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then you've got Rick Barnes, who's going to coach against Texas now. So, you know, they've got storylines out there. You think they don't know what they're doing? Putting Oregon against South Carolina with Jermaine Chouinard, or however you pronounce his name, I forget, played at South Carolina, goes to Oregon now, hangs 40 on him. You think that committee doesn't – I mean, we look at the final matchups, But these guys look at everything. They look at these second round games. They look at matchups. They look at storylines. And we saw storylines play out yesterday. Yesterday was a pretty good day for the committee. Really bad day for Greg Sankey. But a really good day for the and I like Greg Sankey a lot, just for the record. But this idea that you need to kick the little guys out and put more big guys in, man, that argument took a hit last night.
And the SEC went 1-3. Also, Campy and Calipari. Campy's the head coach of Oakland, and Cal apparently good friends. So, yeah, I think that's a big thing.
I mean, they know what they're doing.
Yes, A&M's playing Nebraska. A&M just took Nebraska's AD. So, yeah. You got that. There's plenty, and there's probably other ones that we have not mentioned. And
they must have two or three people on that committee. All right, you're in charge of storylines. You know, Bob and Bill, you figure out who the best teams are. You know, Mike and Mark, you find us some storylines. And that's really, you know, that's a simplified way of putting it. But they kind of, you know, they put all this stuff in a pot and they come out with this bracket. And I think we're seeing some of the method to their madness.
I've got a storyline for you, and you might have seen it. You may not have. Did you see what Long Beach State's athletics director said about their coach? Okay, so for those that don't know, Dan Munson, who is no longer the Long Beach State coach, he was going to be let go after this season. They had a change in their athletics department, new AD, and he told them at the end of the season, hey, we're not going to retain you after this year. We're looking for a change in leadership. That's all. Like that's normal, right? But listen to what this guy was caught saying. My belief and hope is that by doing what I did, aka firing him, and the timing of it, that they would play inspired, and that's what they did. I'm not trying to pat myself on the back, but it worked. Now, Long Beach State, again, won their initial first four game, but lost they ended up getting the tournament. They won their conference tournament, and then lost to Arizona. Good game in the first half. Zona just took over in the second half, but what an egregious thing to say. That's just about as distasteful as it gets.
Anytime someone says, I'm not trying to pat myself on the back, they're trying to pat themselves on the back. Just like when someone says it's not about the money, it's about the money. I mean, it's just kind of how it works.
I read that yesterday, and I thought it was one of them Onion articles, Chuck, or one of the articles that from another website that was misconstrued or taken out of context. But no, that was the case. That was actually said in regards to the head coach Dan Munson no longer there at at Long Beach State. There were some other good games on yesterday, including Dayton, 17 points down in the second half to Nevada. They came storming back.
Blackshear had to pick up his dribble. Five to shoot. Davidson lets fly off the mark. Rebound Coleman. Back. Blackshear, it's not his game, and it won't go. And the Dayton Flyers pull off the second half. Wow, it looked like it was definitely going to be Wolfpack basketball, and that just says it right there. That fan clapping his hands as if to say we had him, and we let him off the hook.
We let him off the hook. Brad Nessler, one of the best in recent memory, calling NCAA tournament games. Love hearing him. Love all these brother broadcasters that are doing a good job through one game of action or one day of action. And we got another round starting today at 11:15.
Well, you look at that game. I mean, they closed on a 24-4 run. I mean, Nevada had that one put away pretty much. Mm-hmm. And, 24-4 is quite a run to end the ball game. But it shows, and we saw this last night in the Kentucky game, when things start to snowball, man, the collars get tight. And pressure begins to mount, and every possession matters. And you can just feel the tightness sometimes through the television when a team has the ball. And I thought, you know, the part of the Nevada game that I saw, you could just see that team falling apart. And there was nothing they could do to stop the snowball. There was nothing they could do. And with every possession, the pressure magnified. And by the end of it, they were toast.
Kentucky, those freshmen, you said it earlier, I never in my wildest dreams thought that they would play as bad as they did last night. Reed Shepard, Dillingham, and Wagner were just nowhere near themselves. I don't think Shepard hit a field goal until the second half. It was inexplicable from the team that I watched all season. And again, I know they didn't have a great outing against A&M, but that was defensively, not offensively. That zone just really confused them last night.
Well, you know, it was interesting. I don't know that it was an incredible amount of confusion going on. I saw Kentucky get shots, and they didn't hit them. And with every shot they missed, they got a little tighter. And mm-hmm. then they started aiming, as I said a little bit earlier. I just thought sometimes when open shots aren't falling and you're the favored team and everyone expects you to win and you're not winning big, you start aiming, man. I mean, you just do. You see it all the time. And I thought Kentucky did that last night. I think that's what a good zone does. You know, if you attack a zone the right way, you're going to get shots. But it doesn't mean you're going to make them. And if you don't make them, with every time down the floor, the pressure mounts. And I just saw that last night watching Kentucky down the stretch. I just thought the only guy that seemed comfortable in the moment to me was Antonio Reeves. Mm-hmm. Everybody else seemed awed by the moment.
He was like 11 of 19 or something, ended up having a really productive night, especially shooting the basketball.
Veteran player. Mm-hmm. Veteran player. He's played against zone before. He's you know, look, it's not like these guys hadn't played zone. I mean, you know, zone's not something new, but you put eight freshmen and three sophomores on a team and against a veteran team that slaps a good zone on you, and then your shots don't fall, the shots you get don't fall, man, that's a recipe for disaster, and that's what happened to him.
I'll tell you last thing on this. Kentucky's Achilles heel this season, outside of their defense, their front court was soft. That's the softest front court that Cal has had since he's been in Lexington. They were tall. They were lanky.
Skilled. They're not skilled.
And they don't have any basketball IQ outside of maybe Edwards. That was it. I mean, Visage, young guy. I know Bradshaw had a good game against us a couple weeks ago, but for the most part, that was the worst front court.
Onyenso's really raw. He's going to be a great player. He's really raw. He's the one that I think really lacks the skill inside that you would expect to see. I'm shocked by what happened to Kentucky. I really am.
Yep.
Hey, sports fans, don't let plumbing issues throw you off your game. Pascal Air Plumbing and Electric is here to tackle those pesky drain blockages and ensure your water heater is always in MVP form. With Pascal's world-class service, you can count on a winning play every time. Whether it's a quick drain clear or a water heater touchdown, Pascal's got the expertise to keep your home running smoothly. Stay in the game and leave the plumbing to the pros. Schedule your service online anytime at gopascal.com. Pascal Air Plumbing and Electric.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light, proud sponsor of Arkansas Athletics.
Well, they weren't in Bob Walker Stadium last night. They were on the road, and the Arkansas baseball team got a 1-0 victory. As we talked to Scott Tabor now. Scott, Hagan Smith, tied your record last night, man. Career strikeouts at Arkansas, now tied for fourth. What was that?
You knew that was coming, didn't you?
Yeah. You know what I did? And it's not really a record tie when you're in fourth place. You're just somewhere in the pecking order, but I appreciate that.
What was it like watching that in real time?
You know, I'm going to have to say this, and it's going to kind of hurt my soul, but back when I played in those Southwest Conference, there's a nasty orange team that played just like we are right now. They weren't very good at offense. They were great at defense, and they were fantastic at pitching. And they won a lot of games, you know, 1-0 or 2-1 or 3-1. And so I think we're getting to see some history made. I mean, I'm looking at stats right now, and I'm just amazed at the numbers this deep into the season, all the zeros up. And the zeros in the loss column is what's fantastic. There's two, you know. Shame on the two pitchers that got the loss. They're going, come on, man, I'm a marked man. So it's fun to watch. I mean, and we're expecting excellence. Every pitcher that comes in, McIntyre comes in, we don't go, oh, we're in the bullpen, we're going to get roped. It's just not there. Then Gackle comes in at the end of the game, and my son and I, who pitches down at Henderson State, we're trying to call pitches. And the great thing was, we didn't get them all right. You know, what would I throw right here? I'm going, I'm doing this. And he goes, I'm doing this. And he throws a 97-mile-an-hour fastball just right by. So it's fantastic to watch.
You know, there was a sequence last night. I want to ask you about this before I let you and Ty go on. He fell behind 3-0. You know, throws a get-me-over fastball. It's 3-1. Then he threw a slider on a fastball count, buckled the guy right a little bit, and then came back and just blew him away with a fastball. He his demeanor on the mound, whether it's 1-2, 3-1, whatever pitch he's got to make for that count, he seems to be able to make.
Well, there's a common misconception that the only pitch that most pitchers can throw for a strike is a fastball, and that's not true. Sometimes when you're having trouble placing your fastball or you're missing high, which is what he was doing in that sequence, you know, he maybe get a little bit tired. I was kind of watching him not finish up his pitches and bring his hand through the zone and what have you. But you throw a changeup or you throw a slider or something to break that rhythm a little bit. And he's got confidence. He's pitched enough. He knows how to throw a slider first strike. And sometimes it doesn't even have to be a strike in that count. It's a hitter's count. And the guy's going, he's going to come in that fastball. He's going to come in that fastball. Oh, it's a slider. And now he's seen the slider at a 3-1 count, and he's thinking, I have no idea what he's going to throw on 3-2. You know, he just lit me up on 3-1. What's he going to do now? So anything he gets close is going to be, you see a little hesitation in the swing when now he's thinking, he's going to throw me another slider, and that fastball adds about 5 miles an hour. So that's what you get when you can get your secondary pitches over.
Scott Tabor's with us here on the McCarty Daniel Hotline. Scott, it wasn't just Hagen that had a really good performance last night. We saw Will McIntyre once again come up big for this baseball team. Also, Gabe Gackel. I want to ask you about the veteran first. It's such a change of pace when he comes in for Hagen or when he comes in for Brady. How confusing is that for hitters that have been getting stuff for the first 5 or 6 innings, and then it shifts so dramatically to what McIntyre's doing?
Well, they're kind of in a dilemma. Especially the first guys that come up and face him, because they want to see a pitch. They just got through seeing, you know, 95, 96 and the nasty slider and all this other stuff on the left side. So they got a right hand. You kind of want to look at one. But the book on McIntyre is you don't let him get deep in the counts. You want to jump on him early. That's why you see a lot of first pitch, you know, first pitch hacks. He'll throw a lot of cutters and what have you on the first pitch just because that's his book. And so, because they know if he gets deep in the count, then his cutter even gets better. He starts getting on top of it a little bit, put a little more depth on it. And he's a pitcher. He is a true artisan when he gets on the mound. I mean, he just picks them apart. And he's tough to hit even if he starts the game. He's just tough to hit because everything looks the same leaving his hand. And I've always thought that that's what a pitcher should do. Everything should look the same when it leaves your hand. It just does something different when it gets to the plate. And that's hard to hit.
Scott,
That's what I'm seeing. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Just Chuck and I were kicking around earlier in the first hour how impressed we were with Gabe Gackel, who had his 5th save last night, but those have been at home and in neutral site, which Dallas wasn't really a neutral site. What do the freshmen from Cali show you to do in that environment, in that tight of a ball game late?
This is going to sound strange, but I always loved to play on the road, to pitch on the road, because if you're throwing well, the crowd's quiet. I mean, you're almost pitching in dead quiet, and then that's when you hear your best hecklers because nobody's saying anything. But Gackel, you just kind of block it out. We've talked about it before. You get between the lines. Some people can, some people can't. You hear a white noise in the background or anything else. You kind of want a little noise. And he goes on the road, and I mean, it's still 60 feet, 6 inches to home plate, and you still have to do the same thing. I saw him after he got 2 outs. He got a little was falling glove side a little bit to his pitches, and you saw him turn around and look at the mound, which all pitchers do because it's not their fault. It's always the mound's fault. And he was missing, and he wasn't missing close. He was missing bad. And then he kind of gathered himself and came back and just it was fun to watch. Just threw it right by him.
And only took 14 pitches. Dave Van Horn said after the game that we'll either see him today or tomorrow. It's probably going to get moved. I'm going to guess that the games are going to get moved to tomorrow because of the rain that's going to go on in Auburn today. But we will have to wait and see on that. We're talking with Scott Tabor this morning, courtesy of our friends at Alumni Hall. Scott, we still haven't seen Hunter Dietz. Dave mentioned his name in the press conference last night. About 10 days out from his recovery. It sounds like they're starting to solidify guys' roles a little bit. I wonder, as a pitcher, what does that dynamic change when a guy comes off of injury and they're still trying to potentially feature him in different situations in conference play?
You know, it's not going to affect the starting lineup. You know, our starting three are going to be our starting three unless one of them gets injured, gets sick, something happens. It'll be nice to have a plug-and-play guy in there if Dietz is everything that he's advertised to be. And so far, we don't have any reason to think that he wouldn't be because everybody that they've got on the staff is performing as advertised, which is something you just rarely, rarely see. I think it'd be great. I know that all the other teams in the conference are going, oh, God, good. They've got another stud coming back. you know, when are they going to pitch him? But he's a guy that may come in, you know, situational for a while, come in and relief, come in after McIntyre, or come in just in the eighth inning, and then to get to Gackle. So having another arm, another great arm, and we haven't seen him yet, so we don't really know. But supposedly a great arm, and if he's already talking about him, his bullpens must be looking really good, and his throwing against live hitters must be looking really good.
Scott, last thing before we let you go, you mentioned Texas earlier, doing it on the defensive side.
I did not mention Texas.
You may or may not have alluded to them, but that's kind of what this Arkansas team has taken shape thus far this season. They win with one home run last night. Yeah, they had six hits, but they weren't able to bring guys home. Are they going to be able to do that in postseason? Are they going to be able to have outings last night, like last night, and continuously win this way?
Yeah, yes and no. You know, if the pitching holds up like we think it will, the thing that you get into is another team scoring on a little Gort hit off the end of the bat where our pitcher walked a guy, and then there's a pass ball and he's on second, and then a guy hits a flare over the second baseman and it scores him from second, and they hadn't gotten the ball out of the infield all day. And so that's the kind of thing that you want to battle, that you're always battling, is that accidental win, you know. And we can win it, you know, and we had the opportunities last night. You just don't get, you don't get hits when guys are in scoring position. Eventually it's going to catch up to you. And this kind of team's not going to go undefeated. No, nobody will go undefeated. Mm-hmm. But we have as good a chance as anybody's ever had from what I'm looking at our staff.
Pitching is as good as it's been under Dave Van Horn. I know that he was asked about
fantastic
Nick Schmidt earlier last night. Hagen Smith is playing like a true Friday night guy, and he once again delivered for this Arkansas baseball team. Scott, we appreciate the time this morning, man. We appreciate Alumni Hall having you on, and we'll catch you up next Friday, okay?
You bet, brother. Can't wait to see you guys.
That is, again, Scott Tabor. Big weekend next weekend. LSU coming to town. That is going to be a phenomenal series in Bob Walker Stadium. Chuck, you referenced a particular instance for Hagen last night. He was able to, what is so encouraging to me thus far, he struck out a lot of guys, struck out 12 last night. But when he has gotten into jams, he's gotten out of them this season, with the exception of game one.
Yeah, he's a lot more of a pitcher than perhaps he gets credit for. You know, we focus on the strikeouts, and I mean he's got all the pitches, and he can make you look foolish at times. But there was one point last night where, if I'm not mistaken, he got out of trouble with a ground ball to second base. Sometimes that's how you got to get out of trouble. You got to pitch to contact, rush your defense to make the plays, and they've got a good defense. So he is much more of a pitcher than perhaps sometimes you associate with a guy that strikes out as many as he does. He's really remarkable, and he's 20 years old. You know, that's the thing. Every time I watch him pitch, he's 20 years old. He's not old enough to buy beer. He's really not. It's incredible to me. And when I watch him pitch and I look at his maturity level out there, I tell myself he's 20 years old. And I think about how immature I was at 20 years old. And it is striking to watch the way he carries himself.
I didn't think about it. He can't buy beer.
He's 20 years old. It's amazing.
That struck a chord with me. I heard you talking about this yesterday.
I had to break it down in language you'd appreciate, Ty.
Yeah, exactly. I think that definitely did. But Hagen Smith, not just the only performer last night. Want to give credit to Will McIntyre and Gabe Gackle. We'll see you, Brady Tiger. I tend to think, again, I'm going to let Dave do the talking on this when asked about the weather. I don't think they're going to play today, but here's Dave on this.
You know, we're going to look at it tomorrow, and I know there's like an 80% chance of rain most of the day. Auburn coaches were told by whoever they deal with the weather here, that it might be a situation later in the evening, say 6-7, where we might have a window there, but we'll look at it. I don't, you know, we're not going to start and there's stuff rolling around, and obviously if it just keeps raining, plus we'll have to look at the condition of the field. So, you know, it looks like it could rain into Saturday, maybe midday. You know, that's our last day to play. So if that's the case, we'd have to play 2-7s.
And I was thinking about this when I heard him say this last night. I don't know if that helps or hurts which team. I don't know if it's beneficial to Arkansas that you get a day's rest and then you take on Auburn two games, or if that helps Auburn more. I would think it would probably be the home team, but I don't
think it matters.
It's a wash, you think? Pun intended.
I don't think it matters. I think every day's the same. the team that's better, the better team, has the advantage, whether you're playing one game a day, whether you're playing three games a day, whether you're playing five games in 2 days, however you've got it worked out, the better team always has the advantage.
I don't care if Arkansas wins game two. I don't care if they win game three. Just would be nice to come back from Auburn. Doesn't matter about the winning streak. You just want to come back with the series win.
I was looking at the weather for Auburn today. It looks like the heaviest stuff's going to be during the daytime. It's showing right around a 50% chance of rain at 7 o'clock tonight, diminishing as the night goes on. I hope that they do everything they can to get it in, although tomorrow looks really good there, sunny and low 60s. But doubleheaders don't always give you a great representation of the teams. That, to me, is more the equalizer than anything. That's why I say I don't think it favors either side, because doubleheaders are, doubleheaders can be tough to sweep. So maybe, maybe it favors the lesser team to an extent, but I really don't think so. The better team's generally the one that's going to come out on top.
We'll keep you updated here on ESPN Arkansas and hitthatline.com. The voice of Razorback baseball, Phil Austin, is on our airwaves, so you will be the first to know about the game or no game later on tonight. All right, we've got our hog update coming up. We've got Fence Man Friday picks, and we still need to talk about Eric Musselman, Layden Blocker, and some basketball news that I think is important to all of you.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with privacy mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, because, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course. Present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again. Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is. Drawing board or...
Miro. All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
Hi, everybody. This is Chris George from Joshua's Fine Jewelry in beautiful downtown Russellville. It's the most wonderful time of the year. Christmas gifts, weddings, heirloom family treasures. And at Joshua's Fine Jewelry, we only have one sale every year, and it's right now. Every single item in our store is value priced for Christmas. We do custom one-of-a-kind jewelry. If that's what you're looking for, come see us. You can get anything fixed for a Christmas gift, selection, quality, service, and Christmas red tag prices now through Christmas at Joshua's Fine Jewelry in beautiful downtown Russellville.
Have you tried Benville Brewing's new Space Goose Hazy India Pale Ale? It's handcrafted in Arkansas. You'll taste the great tropical citrus, including the passion fruit, the guava, and pineapple. It's creamy, zingy, and zows the taste buds. It's weird, wonderful, and wacky all at the same time. Try the new Space Goose Hazy India Pale Ale from Benville Brewing.
There's not a lot in Jeff Borzillo's story talking about Eric Musselman to SMU. He referenced him, Will Wade, who McNeese State did not fare well yesterday. Chuck, both of our upset picks lost, unfortunately.
Yeah, I know, man. they laid an egg.
Yeah, it was not
who
great.
Cares about Will Wade, that bum?
They just made you hate him any more last night that he didn't come through for you. But Will Wade and then Western Kentucky's Steve Lutz. Now, this is a thought. Five players have left this Arkansas basketball program. Do they know? Do they know that Eric Musselman could have 1 foot in, 1 foot out the door? Or do they just want to go elsewhere? I think the players would maybe be privy to that information. Now, I don't think you're going to get it from Joseph or Layden or Devo or any of the other, Dinaje or Keon Minifield, but five guys have left this basketball program. Maybe we get an announcement in the coming days about another guy or two. But that is an intriguing part of all this is your basketball coach going to be retained? And could one of the reasons be that all these guys are leaving is because your basketball coach might be leaving? Something I thought about the last 48 hours or so. And then this SMU story pops up, which they don't have a great basketball program. They had a good football program back in the day with Dickerson and James. And again, Pony Express. But that's not a basketball program that is just illustrious history. But you know what they do have? They got Bush, and they got other bigwigs in Dallas, Texas that have money out the wazoo. In fact, they are, just to join a bigger Power 5 conference, they're not getting money from the ACC for, 7 to 10 years? Till they're just relying on donations and bigwigs taking care of it. So there would be NIL money that could be offered in Dallas, Texas, a great metroplex, a lot of businesses down there. So while SMU on paper doesn't look like a great basketball job, in today's climate, it might actually be.
Are you tying the two together? I mean, are you? First off, I think players make their decisions based on themselves. I don't know how else to put it. It's hard to find many players right now that you look at and you say, all right, he's making his decisions based on what's best for the team. You know, those players, frankly, sometimes are few and far between. And I don't think any of them are making their decision on what the coach is going to do. I don't think that, you know, and first off, I don't think this has transpired, just for the record. But I don't think in this case players, I don't think any of the players who have announced that they are leaving, I don't think it's contingent upon anything that Eric Musselman does. Stays, goes, jumps in the lake, whatever. I don't think it has to do with anything.
See, I do. I think even in...
But why? Why do you think
because
that?
Because in today's climate of college sports, as big of a deal as NIL is, there are still relationships between coaches and said players. And if you are under the impression, or you know, or you actually know that a coach is no longer be at the campus that you're at, some guys will follow after the fact, or some guys will just get out of there before another coach is inserted in. I still think that there is a relationship between player and coach. It's not as tight as it used to be. I will fully admit that. But I still think there is, even today, in 2024.
I don't disagree with that, Ty, but in this case, if you put it under the microscope, you know, and you look beyond the generalities here, the players that are leaving because they were not getting to play. If you're operating under the assumption that they are leaving because they think Mus is leaving, that doesn't add up. They're leaving because Mus wouldn't let them play as much as they thought they should be playing. That's why they're leaving. If anything, I would think they would be inclined to leave if Mus was staying, because he's the one that didn't play them as much as they think they ought to be playing. Now, look, we're going into a rabbit hole right here, and I don't want to venture too far down into this. I think that these are two or three separate subjects, and I don't know that they're all tied in together. I don't think the players leaving has anything to do with what Mus may or may not do. I think they're independent decisions of that.
Bill from Northeast Arkansas saying, why would Mus still be contacting players if he's leaving? Well, I'll cite Jimmy Smith, who was coaching and recruiting Arkansas in the morning and then was TCU's running backs coach in the afternoon. That's just the way of college.
It's different when you're the head coach, though, Ty. It's different when you're the head coach. When you're the assistant, you're operating at somebody else's pleasure. When you're the head coach, you're in charge of the program. Now, you know, the thing that, you know, you wonder right now is, what's this roster going to look like? You know, beyond what does it all mean? I mean, what's this roster going to look like? Who are they going to bring in here? You know, we're going to have essentially an entirely new basketball team next year. Now, it looks like, based on what we've heard so far, an entirely new is probably an overstatement. But you look at what's there right now, and these are all ifs. I'm just talking from the outside looking in.
Mm-hmm.
Battlemark and Brazil come back. There's a core. I've not heard anything from them saying they're leaving. What I've heard are players who were not getting to play as much as they thought they ought to. There's a realization that it wasn't going to happen. My guess would be with the limitations the coaching staff feels are there were candidly addressed. And these kids decided that if they were going to play, they needed to go somewhere else. Now, I don't think that has anything to do with Muss. Now, Muss may decide at some point, probably will. He'll probably decide to coach somewhere else at some point in his life. I don't know if it's now. I don't know if it's 20 years from now. I have no earthly idea in that regard. I don't know that the SMU situation has anything to do with this. I do know that SMU, for whatever reason, decided to fire a coach that they hired to replace a disastrous situation or come into a disastrous situation. He won 10 games his first year. He won 20 games his second year, and they fired him because they are ready to upgrade because they're moving to the ACC. Now, logic would tell you that they're not going to fire that guy unless they've got a pretty good idea what direction they're going. Now, whether or not that has anything to do with what's happening here or any other place in the country, I have no idea. You know, the place that ought to be worried is Florida Atlantic. That's the place that ought to be worried about losing their head coach. If Florida Atlantic doesn't crash and burn in their first-round game today, Dusty May resumes his spot as the hottest coaching commodity in America. He may be the one all these guys are after. I have no idea. Logic would tell you SMU's got an idea about what direction they're going. But whether or not that ties into anything that's going on around here, I'm not sure about that. But I am certain, I am absolutely certain, that the players who have left so far are leaving because they don't feel like they've been playing enough.
I wonder how appealing Muss still is across college basketball with this season. We heard from Nick Coffey earlier this week, who does afternoons in radio, that has a very high opinion of Eric Musselman. Again, they had an off year. They don't make the tournament. They finish under 500 for the first time in his career. I would still think he would be the hot commodity. Now, he might not be Dusty May equivalent because of that.
He is a hot commodity.
Yes.
He is a hot coach out there.
Yes.
He's not the flavor of the month. But he is a very well-respected coach.
Yes, and May, they weren't as good. I say that. We'll see what they do today, and that maybe determines his fate. I know that it's a little harder to hire a coach that just lost in the first round than, let's say, a coach that went to the round of 32 or Sweet 16, but what it's up pans off for him. You mentioned, though, with Mark, Battle, and Brazil. Mark and Battle are going to have suitors in college basketball. I think Brazil is, even though he didn't have a great season relative to kind of our expectations. So you're going to have to invest in guys and sink more money in them than you probably did last year. That's an assumption. That's my assumption. And I wonder how that's going to sit with NIL people in Arkansas that are being asked for more money after a losing season. How responsive they are to that. I think you're competitive in basketball. I think you're really good in baseball. I think you're really competitive in basketball. And I think you're middle of the pack to end of the pack in the SEC, which is still good in college football. But as we know from recruiting rankings, the SEC is a behemoth in football, and it's just hard to... That is an aspect of this. Just retaining those three guys, it's really hard for my mind to compute paying them more, even though they were producing down the stretch.
How do you know you're going to have to?
Because they're going to have suitors in college basketball. And
who's coming after him?
Mark, I would think a lot of people would be interested in particularly battling Mark. I mean,
people are going to come after him and offer him some big raise.
I think so. Okay. Again, it's one of those things where, yes, as a whole season-wise, do you think LLS got more at Arkansas than he did at Louisville? Absolutely. There's no question. He was on a terrible team at Louisville, but He got pulled into Arkansas, not just because of NIL, but the prospect of going to the NCAA tournament, the prospect of winning.
So do you think we're going to lose those guys?
I think it's not entirely certain that they're going to be retained here in Arkansas because of the money.
Well, they're going to be retained. I mean, they're not going to be asked to leave.
No. Again, from the financial standpoint, because they're going to get paid more. I would bet my life on the fact that Tremont Mark and Caleb Battle will make more money than they did last year. I would bet anything out there in the world that that's going to happen because of what they did individually. Their value didn't go down.
That's kind of how the world works.
Yeah, their value didn't go down. They went up. And again,
what do you do? What do you do? Just say no and ditch them and start over?
No. The point is you have to pay them more.
I understand that after
a losing season, though.
But your alternative, Ty, is to say, okay, no, we're not going to do it. You guys can walk. Is that what you want to do?
No, I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying is it's harder to convince people with money that are contributing to this fund that they have to contribute more to keep two guys on a team that were not individually, but the team wasn't good this year. Does that make sense? I mean, that is hard for me to invest.
I think you're oversimplifying it, but I understand what you're saying.
If I'm investing in a company, right, and they have a down...
I get what you're saying. I understand the premise that you're coming from. I'm saying I don't think we're talking about... I think you're making it sound like they're going to have to go out and raise $2 million to keep Brazil battling Mark, and I don't think that's the way it's going to work.
If I had to guess what's going on between closed doors between Eric Musselman and Bigwigs or however they go about doing this, he's asking for more money than he did get last year because he's going to cite, okay, this is the amount of money we got. This is what happened. We need more. And it's not just about those two individuals. And if you want to throw Trevin in there, that's fine.
I understand what you're saying. I hear what you're saying. I don't think we're talking about break the bank issues here.
That is also a contingent factor in the possibility of Eric Musselman leaving is if he doesn't get not just the contract extension or potentially what he wants within his contract, which they need to raise his buyout. It's a little under $1 million right now. There's no way that should be what it is. Hunter's got to figure that out. There are jobs out there that could supply more money in NIL than what Arkansas is doing right now. They're not better basketball programs. They don't have better fans. They don't have better traditions. But NIL is taking center stage in all of recruiting and all of college basketball.
We do so much supposing. When it comes to NIL, we just suppose we know how much Arkansas's got. We just suppose we know how much Louisville and SMU and all these other places. We just suppose that all these schools are going to come after Mark and Battle in Brazil and pay them so much more money than we are right now. And we just suppose that our boosters are going to balk. We don't know. We don't know. Let them work this thing out. They'll get it worked out. We'll have a basketball team next year. I don't believe that Arkansas, if they decide they want to keep Battle Mark in Brazil, I don't think they're going to get outbid. Now, maybe they may leave because they want to play somewhere else, but I don't believe that. Maybe I'm naive, but I don't believe that college basketball suitors are going to be just bolting to Fayetteville to steal Battle Mark in Brazil away from a team that went 15-17. I don't believe that.
I think it's a different approach for each coach out there. And if coaches find value, which Eric Musselman found value in some guys that weren't on great teams this past year, Mark being the exception with that Houston team. Again, it didn't work here in Fayetteville, but other coaches think that, listen, if Caleb was a second guy or if he was the centerpiece, he'd be a big deal. Same with Mark. If he was the second guy or the third guy on this team, we could really have roster. And you're right. You're 100% correct. This is all assuming. We have no... we don't have the financial sheets in front of us, but we always refer back to NIL being the main core issue nowadays. So that leads me to believe when a situation like this happens and a guy goes elsewhere, it wasn't that he wasn't getting minutes like Battle and Mark. If one of them was to transfer, my
head is spinning. Because we have tied five or six different issues. I don't even know what we're talking about. We began talking about our blocker and these other guys leaving because they know what Mus is going to do. And we've morphed into this wild discussion on what it's going to take to keep Battle Mark in Brazil. And I'm not sure what we're talking about here. Maybe you can help me.
The prospect of keeping your college roster with five guys already leaving. And the main guys, the core you talked about. It's going
I
to
just
take-
think you're going down a rabbit hole here when you're talking about Brazil, Mark, and you're changing the subject. We started with Blocker, and you're going into NIL and what it's going to take to keep these other three guys, and I'm just lost.
I think they all tie in together. I think okay. It all ties in together. Right. It's not just a one thing. It's a college basketball issue. It's not just a guy doesn't leave just because of one thing. He doesn't leave just because of one thing. He leaves because of multiple things. And in this case, playing time is probably the most obvious thing. And I would agree with you on that. But that's not the only reason. Freshmen in college basketball, some guys just don't play. And yet they stick around.
If your stars were leaving all of a sudden, that's a sign. The guys who weren't getting to play, they were going to leave anyway. They were going to leave anyway. Whether we were speculating about what Eric Musselman's future holds, Leighton Blocker, Joseph Pinion, all these other guys that have entered the portal, I lose track, Menefield, Denage, they'd all left anyway. Every single one of them would have left.
I don't know if they would have left if you had lost all these, or if you had won and gotten the NCAA tournament this year. I think
I don't agree with that, what I said, what you're the original premise, and again, you're changing the subject. I'm trying to be respectful here, but you said a minute ago they were leaving because of Mus. Now you're saying they might leave or they wouldn't have left if they made the NCAA tournament. My point is all of these guys made decisions independent of what Eric Musselman's going to do. I don't believe they are related in any way, shape, or form.
I said it was a possibility that they may know that their head coach is leaving, and that could potentially cause them to exit. For example, Joseph Pinion didn't play a lick last year. He stuck around. They had a winning season down the stretch. It's not always about playing time. Some guys just like being a hog. Some guys just like playing.
Joseph Pinion stayed because he thought he was going to get to play this year. The truth of the matter is, if Joseph Pinion thought Mus was leaving, I think Joseph Pinion might be more inclined to stay. I mean, that's the truth. That's how I view it. You know, if you want to get right down to it, Pinion's people are mad because Mus didn't play him. I mean, that's the truth of the matter. And I just don't think these guys are leaving because Mus has told them he's leaving. I just don't see that at all. Now, you know, whether or not he leaves, whether or not there's a job out there that he finds more attractive, that's a different subject. To me, that's, you know, that might be worth talking about somewhere down the road. But I think we're stretching right now.
This podcast has been presented by Bet Online.
This podcast is an exclusive property of Pearson Broadcasting. It may not be copied, reproduced, modified, published, uploaded, reposted, transmitted, or distributed in any way without Pearson Broadcasting's prior written consent. Subscribe to the Hit That Line Podcast Network, the best podcast in the Natty State. Just search Hit That Line wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with privacy mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course, present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again! Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is! Drawing board or...
Miro! All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro Brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.